Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Shabbos Daf Yud Dalid. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief four-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the daf before the shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin our shiur today, seven lines from the top of Daf Yud Dalid. We are in the middle of a sugya dealing with the 18 gezeros, where we rule like Beis Shammai over Beis Hillel. And in our last discussion, we were involved with a list of cases where things were ruled upon to be metame truma. So we say as follows, oichel, oichel rishon, the oichel, oichel sheni, a person who eats food that is a rishon level of tumah, or he ate food that's a sheni level of tumah. According to Rabbi Yoshua, this person, and of course this is a rabbinic ruling, because on a Torah level, halacha standard, food does not metama a person. But on a rabbinic level, the food makes the person tomei to the extent that if he touches truma, he will render it posel. Marking-wise, we will be using triangles, and they are explained on the side under our Mivneh heading, Tamei Hagzeros Shel Hayudches Dover Mesumon Betriangle. That means that the reason behind the 18 Gezeros, when we encounter a Gzera, we will be noting the reason for it, which is introduced by the Gemara by the expression Mai Taima Gozru, using the triangle. So here the Gemara asks, "Mai taimu gazru be rabbona tuma? Why is it that the rabbona imposed this rabbinic level of tuma on the person that who eats food that's a rishon or sheni level of tuma that he will ruin truma?" Answer: the zimna de ochil ochlin tamein. At times, a person will be eating food that's tamei, v'shokil mashkin de truma, v'shodi lepumei, and he will take actual truma and put it in his mouth for as a drink. In other words, wine. Wine is the only beverage that is tithed and would get the truma label to it, being that wine is something that needs to be tithed. And while he is eating food that is tuma, he might take a drink of wine, of truma, of actual truma, and in that case, the truma will become tuma on a real basis, on a Torah level basis. So we enact this din rabbanan to make a person tuma, so as to distance himself from drinking truma wine while eating food that's tuma. So the fear is, as the Gemara just said, that while eating food that's tummy, he might take a drink of wine. Vishadi lepume means put it in his mouth, pusil, and ruin the wine will become pusil because of the food that he is eating. So as we said, we go one step further and declare that a person who eats tummy food will be capable of ruining truma upon merely touching it. So as to stringency will keep him away from this situation of, while eating tamei food, taking a drink of truma wine. Shoyse mashkin tamein, the source had told us on Daf Yud Gimel that one who drinks liquids that are tamei, that will make him puzzle regarding truma, make the person puzzle with three, as we said, if he would then touch truma, he'll ruin it. My time goes to Rabbana Tuma. Why did they impose Tuma on this case? And you might have noticed already that we have a house form that highlights the term mashkin and oichlin de truma. So here we're asking about someone who is drinking truma, drinking tomei wine or tomei beverage makes the person tomei. Why did they impose this gezeira? Answer: de zimnin de shosa mashkin tomein. You can have a situation where a person is drinking liquids that are tomei, v'shokil oichlin de truma, v'shodi lepume, and he'll take some truma food, solid food that's truma, different types of fruits or vegetables that were tithed as truma, and place it in his mouth, uposil lehu, and the tomei beverage that he's drinking while eating the truma food stuff will render the truma food stuff unfit. So the Gemara asks, Hainu hach, these seem to be the same gezerah, the case of one eats truma food or one drinks, and let's say that again, one eats tomei food or one drinks a tomei beverage, and yet we seem to count them as separate gezeros. So the Gemara is asking, Hainu hach, are they not one in the same? The Gemara answers, Mahu detema ha shchichi, v'ha lo shchichi. One might have thought, let us say, by teaching the case of Ochlin Temeim, that in that case they impose a gzera, because that's a common thing. It's a common thing for a person to drink while eating. So there would be a necessity of imposing the tuma on the person eating Ochlin Temeim so as to protect the truma beverage. However, that one will eat while he's drinking. A person sits down to drink and we're worried about his eating while he's drinking. That's uncommon. It's lo shchichi. And therefore, there would be no need to impose a gezeira on that, to metame the person for drinking a tomei beverage. Komashmon, so the source that listed all of these different forms of tumah includes this as well. I wouldn't have known to include it had it not been taught as a separate gzera. We continue. Another example of something, a situation that will cause tumah regarding truma. This is describes a person who, after he was toivel from his tumah, person who had been actually tomei, went to a mikveh and is awaiting sundown, but before sundown he hops into a shower or a bath. That's habo rosha v'rubo b'mayim shufim. He goes into a bath of drawn water on the day that he had gone to the mikveh. We say that this person is tomei. You know, he will ruin truma. My time a gozber abonin tuma. Why did they impose a tuma on such an individual? An individual who, after all, he went to the mikveh, and we explained earlier when on the previous daf, he is tuma even after sundown. In other words, the fact that he went to mikveh and had experienced hair of shemesh afterwards doesn't help in the event that he had gone into a bath after going to the mikveh. So why did they impose this gezeira on him of his having gone to the bath after the mikveh as canceling the mikveh immersion? Why did they do this? Omer of Bevai, Omer of Asi, Shebetchila hoyu toivlin b'mei ma'oros mechunasim usruchin. Before the days of nice, clean, pristine mikvois, people used to immerse themselves in caves that had pools of water in them, and they were the waters were disgusting. They were effective in terms of creating tara, but they were sruchin, means they were foul. And after the immersion, simply to get rid of the foulness, they poured over themselves drawn water. And drawn water is fine for cleaning yourself off, but it's not fit for immersion. Hischinu va'asa'um keva. This practice then became keva, literally means permanent. Gozru tumo alehen. gozu alehem tuma, and then they impose tuma upon them. My keva. So what Rav Asi said is a little bit obscure. He simply described that after they had gone to the mikveh in the disgusting water, they started to go into baths or take showers, and they made it keva. So to explain Rav Asi's comment of Asom Keva, we have here Abaye, and a few lines later Rova, and we've noted them on the side under our Mivneh heading, the double underline marking, Abaye and Rova. These are Tshuvos, Lahasbir Divrei Rav Asi, Shishchilu Lasois Oisom, the Mayim Shuvim Keva. What does he mean by that? What's the problem here? Omar Abaye, Shohoyu Oimrim, they used to say, Lo Elu Mitarin, the cave water, which is essentially accumulated rainwater. They started to say they are not the source of the purification. Ela elu v'elu mitaren, but rather you need to have, in addition to the cave water, you need to have the bath. Omar le Rava, my nafkamina ha kotavli b'hanoch. Rava says, so what? So even if they had this misconception, but at the end of the day, they still immersed themselves in a proper mikveh. So what? They believed that you need to have the bath also. Ela Omar Rava. Rava explains, here is the problem. Shoy Omrim, people began to think, Lo Elu Mitarin, the cave actual mikveh is not mitar. People began to develop this misconception, thinking that it's not the mikveh in the cave that was the source of the purification. Ela Elu Mitarin. But rather, only these, the bath, was mitayer. And that's a serious mistake. So the rabbis imposed this rule that anyone who goes to a bath after the mikveh, that bath, of course, we're talking about going to the bath after the mikveh, all taking place before sundown. According to this rabbinic ruling, the bath in such a case will cancel the effectiveness of the mikveh. And by doing that, so it distanced people from taking the bath right after the mikveh, preserving the mikveh as the sole means of tahara. The next is again a quote from the source on Daf Yud Gimel concerning the things that were mitame, that would create tuma on a person with regard to truma, that would metam a person, and he would in turn pasol truma. And this is the case of the Torah, Shinoflu al Roshav Rubo Shloshalugim Mayim Shuvim. A person who was Tohor, that was poured over him three lug of drawn water. And as we've said before, the drawn water, as you know, is not kosher for immersion. My time of Gozer Berabon and Tumah, why did they impose Tumah on a person who was basically Tohar? Unlike the case before of Abol Roisha Ruba B'mayim Shuvim, that was describing a person who had been Tomei that day. Here we're talking about a person that was Tohar. So why did they make him Tomei by having three lug of drawn water poured over him? Answer, the E Lo Ha, if they wouldn't have made a Gzera, even on a Tohar person, Lo Kaima Ha. So the other exer would not have been able to be preserved. In other words, you needed to add, we'll call it firepower or gezera power, in order to preserve the previous gezera as well. So they went even further and declared that even a Torah person upon whom three lug of drawn water is poured will become tummy. So this created a mindset of in the minds of the public that drawn water could ruin your tahara experience. The sefer, we spoke about a person who came into contact with a physical contact, in which he touched a Torah scroll, or he touched the parchment upon which you have a Torah written, or quite likely all holy writings, any book of the Tanakh. My time of Gozu Bei Rabbanan Tumah, why was Tumah imposed on this, in this case? Omer of Mishashia. He gives the background. Shebetchila, Hoyumatznian es Oichlin de Truma Eitzel Sefri Torah. People used to take Truma food, food items that were tithed as Truma, which is given to a Kohen. and they would keep them, hide them, store them away next to the Sifrei Torah, the Omru, thinking, or with the claim, Hai Kodesh Vai Kodesh. The Truma is holy, and there are a lot of restrictions that apply to Truma that don't apply to common food, making the Truma classified as holy, and naturally Torah scrolls are holy. So it's only right to keep the holy next to the holy. However, came the Kachazu Dekasi Lidei Pseida, when they noticed that the Torah scrolls were getting ruined as a result of this. Very simply, as Rashi says, the mice who are attracted to food were attracted to the Truma food and started nibbling on the food. And as you know, the way of mice is they nibble on anything. They started to nibble onto the Sefer Torah as well, ruining the Sifrei Torah. So they saw that the Sifrei Torah were coming to ruination. Gazru be Rabbanan Tuma. So they imposed Tuma on the holy scrolls, that the Tuma that the holy scrolls would create would be a source of Tuma, thereby motivating people to, or we'll say deterring people from keeping the Truma, which needs to be maintained in a state of Tara. Otherwise, Truma that's Tamea, we get rid of. So they imposed Tuma on the Sefer. The Sefer would be a source of a Tuma vis-a-vis Truma, thereby, as we said, deterring people from keeping the Truma near the Torah scrolls. V'hayodayim, another source of Tuma for Truma are hands. That means hands that have not been washed. And why? So here we have a triangle, even though you don't see the expression Mai Taim Ogazu, but here is the explanation. Shadayim Asconius Hain. Rashi has two explanations of this, but he prefers the first pshat, showing three reasons why not to accept the second pshat that he features. So we'll stick with the Rashi's initial explanation on hands, or asconius hain. It means the hands touch everything. And Rashi in the first pshat says, and we have this in our Rashi, you can see a Roman numeral number 1, v'noigim bibsoro v'mokum tinoifes. A person's hands touch all different parts of his own body, and they'll touch even dirty parts of his body. Ugnai l'truma b'kach, and it's dishonorable to truma to have hands that were touching dirty parts of the body, then touching the truma, v'nimas l'oichlin shenogea bo b'yidayim su'avois, and it would then make the food disgusting when it's touched by hands that are unclean. The Gemara continues, Tana, af yodayim habois machma sefer poislis es a truma, mishum de Rabbi Parnach. Not only does the Holy Scroll, as we said before, ruin the Truma, that means if the Sefer Torah would touch Truma, the Truma will become ruined, but even hands of a person that touched a Sefer would ruin Truma, based on Rabbi Parnach's teaching. The Omer Rabbi Parnach, and here you have a new marking, so on the side we have a Mivneh, with a double underline and design between them, shlavim. These are stages. Lahasbir divrei Rabbi Parnach. So, in order before we can understand what he's saying, we'll see we have to go through several stages of Gemara. So, the Amar Rabbi Parnach, Rabbi Yochanan, Oichi Sefer Torah Orum Nikbar Orum. One who holds a Sefer Torah Orum, Rashi says that would be without a cloth. So then, such a person is to be buried unclothed. So the Gemara asks, "Orum salkadaitoch? What do you mean here? Do you mean that a person, because he touched the Sefer Torah without, you know, with a direct contact with the Sefer Torah, he's therefore to be buried unclothed?" So Elo, Amar Rabbi Zera, what Rabbi Parnach means is Orum beloy mitzvus. He's buried without. Without mitzvahs means mitzvah, a mitzvahless individual. So the Gemara asks, below mitzvah sakadaitoch, do you really mean to say that he's buried without mitzvahs? He loses all the mitzvahs because he touched a sefer Torah directly without the without a cloth separating his hands from the sefer Torah. Elo ema orum below oisa mitzvah. So here the Rashi, the Tosfos at the bottom explains below oisa mitzvah im ochsoi lumoid boy ein lo schar shel oisa limud vim b'shvil goyloi einu mekabel schar al haglila. If he had touched the sefer Torah with his hands directly in order to learn from the sefer Torah, so he doesn't get the reward of that particular learning that he did. At that time, he was holding the Sefer Torah with his direct hands, and if he had been rolling the Sefer Torah, which is or glila, which is what we practice when we read from the Torah, a glila is done as well. Exactly what glila is, we're going to. We won't get involved with that right now. In fact, there might very well be different explanations, but glila is one of the activities that surround the reading of the Sefer Torah. If one held it for glila, he won't get reward for the glila, for the rolling of the Sefer Torah. So what we have seen so far, the last several lines of Gemara, is that a special tumah was imposed on holy scrolls, that they will metamet, they will passel truma if they come into contact with the truma. We saw a gzera concerning hands, people's hands in general, being metame or passeling truma, and we also saw hands that had come into contact with a holy scroll will passel truma. The Gemara now asks regarding the issue of hands. Hey, Gozur Beresha, which rabbinic ruling was put into place first? Was the din of Stam Yodayim, a general hand rule, or was the rule concerning hands that had come into contact with a sefer? In Lema, Ha Gozur Beresha, unfortunately, the Gemara uses simple pronouns, so we have to explain what the pronoun ha means, because you'll have the use of this pronoun here and also at the top, the second line from the top of Omid Beis. So if you were to think that they made the gzera on Stam Yodayim first, meaning across the board gzera on all hands before they are washed through Netilas Yodayim, that hands in general will ruin Truma, will passel Truma, if you say that was the first of the two gzeros, then we're now at the top of Omid Beis. Kevon dehach gozer bereisha. Well, since they made an across-the-board ruling on hands, namely stam yodayim, unwashed hands, will ruin Truma, so hasu lomali, why is there any necessity of imposing an additional gzera concerning hands that had come into contact with holy scrolls? Is that not just a subcategory of all cases of hands? Of course it is. Ela ha gozer bereisha. Rather, historically, they imposed the gzera first on hands that came into contact with holy scrolls. That only that kind of hand situation will passel truma. And then after imposing the ruling concerning hands that are vachma sefer, that's elo hach gozer bereisha. Again, here's the pronoun. Hach is the case of the hands coming into contact with the sefer was the initial gzera. V'hodar gozer b'kulu yadayim. And then they expanded the gzera concerning hands, unwashed hands, as passeling truma to all cases of hands, not just hands that someone had touched a sefer Torah. The next case, we're at the third line from the top on Omid Beis, Utvul Yoim. In the source on Daf Yud Gimel Omid Beis, of the things that passel truma, we mentioned a person who was a Tvul Yom. This is a person who was Tomei and went to the mikveh, and sundown has not yet arrived. So if he touches truma, so he'll passel it. The Gemara asks, Tvul yoim da'oi raisa hu dichtiv uvo hashemesh v'toher. A person who is a tvul yom is tome on a Torah level without any rabbinic intervention. He is mitama, as the pasuk indicates, that only upon sunset, uvo hashemesh, with the sun setting, v'toher, then he achieves tara, implying that before that he is not tohor. So the Gemara says, Sami mikan tvul yom. So take out of the list the case of tvul yom that doesn't belong in the list of rabbinic gezeros passeling truma, because the tvul yom will passel truma even without the rabbinic intervention. V'ha'oichlin shenitmu b'mashkin. Food that comes into contact, food that became tomei through mashkin, so that food will then passel truma. Here you'll notice that we are using a double underline on under our mivneh heading on the side. The ilema ella is emphasized. These are shlavei biur. These are stages in trying to understand what we are talking about. And we'll be using this double underline in the Ilema Ella structure of the Gemara a little bit later as well. In other words, if you say this, then it will run into trouble. Rather, you'll have to say something else. Ilema Ella is a structure in the Gemara, very standard form of stage analysis. So the Gemara asks, B'mashkin demai, which mashkin did the food come into contact with that would then render the food capable of passeling truma? If you're to think that we're talking about a beverage that came into contact with a dead sheretz. Sheretz, there are different kinds of creatures that are listed in the Torah that when they're dead, they impart tuma. So if you think that it's talking about a dead sheretz, like let's say, for example, a dead mouse that came into contact with mashkin. Well, da'oraisa ninhu, those mashkin are a rishon l'tuma. They're a first level tuma on a Torah basis, and as such, they will matama food. They'll matama food on a Torah basis. D'chtiv v'chol ha'mashke asher yishoseh. From this pasuk, we learn that mashkin become tomei through contact with a source of Torah level tuma. The Rashi elaborates on this pasuk and gives you background behind it, but for our purposes, this pasuk is a source in the Torah for the mashkin becoming tomei. And if the mashkin are tomei from the Torah already, so of course they will passel truma upon contact. Elo b'mashkin haboyin machmas yodayim. The case featured in our source that we had to quote four lines above in the frame. Food that came into contact with mashkin, which mashkin? Mashkin that had come into contact with hands before the hands were washed. So that hands are metameh before they are washed, that is a rabbinic ruling. Because we're not talking about a person who is tomei. We're talking about simply a person who touched mashkin before washing his hands. And that mashkin then, if it comes into contact with food, will metame the food, and that food would then passel truma. So we've explained the nature of the mashkin, and here you see a triangle. This is the explanation of why they made this gzeira. Ugzeira mishum mashkin haboin mach masheretz. They imposed tuma on the mashkin that comes from contact with unwashed hands in anticipation of the case of mashkin that came into contact with a dead sheretz, and that kind of mashkin would be matam on a Torah level. So as is the case in many situations, once you have a Torah level problem in the background, the rabbis moved in to impose a rabbinic level tuma on other cases. The next example of things that are metamach, that pasal truma, kelim to shenit move a mashkin. vessels that became tumei through contact with liquids. Now, this in and of itself is rather perplexing, because we know in general that vessels do not become tumei through contact with liquids. So we're going to have to understand the background to this. Of course, we're dealing with a rabbinic ruling, so in rabbinic rulings we find cases that don't conform to the Torah standard of imparting of tumah. So the Gemara asks, "Kainin de itmu b'mashkin demai?" The vessels spoken about here became tomei through what kind of liquid? E lemo b'mashkin dezav. If you think it's talking about mashkin, these are liquids that come forth from a person that is a zav. For example, a person, a zav, this is a male that had a certain type of emission that makes him tomei. His saliva will be a source of tumah. And the Gemara asks, if it's that liquid that the rabbis imposed this gezeirah on, that the mashkin dezav is a rabbinic source of tumah for the vessels, well, that you don't need rabbinic intervention for that. Doraisa ninu, that mashkin, the mashkin dezav is mitam on a total level. The pasuk says v'chiyoruk hazav batahor mashabiyat tor temesi loch. If the Torah describes as azav spitting, and from this pasuk we learn that if he spits onto something that you are holding, namely if you're holding a vessel, the vessel will become tomei because of the spit of the zav. So obviously the mashkin dezav is mitame without rabbinic intervention. So what's the case of shnut mu b'mashkin that the rabbis made tomei? Elo b'mashkin haboin machmas sheretz. It might sound a little tricky here, because in the section before it was mentioned that mashkin haboin machmas sheretz is doraisa, and here we're saying mashkin haboin machmas sheretz is derabbanan. So as to avoid confusion, what was meant before regarding mashkin haboin machmas sheretz is doraisa, that is true with regard to the liquid's ability to metama food items. However, the ability of liquids to metama vessels have a different standard. Of course, it's more difficult to be metama vessels than it is to metama food. So mashkin, that's liquids that came into contact with a dead sheretz, so it's a dead mouse, came into contact with some water. The water, it's true, becomes tomei, but only insofar as its ability to metama food, midoraisa. But the water's ability to metama vessels doesn't exist, midoraisa. But midorabbanon, it does. And that's what is referred to in this Gemara. That mashkin abon machma sheretz is metama kelim midorabbanon. And those vessels then will pasel truma. And why did they impose this? Why did they make mashkin haboin machmas sheretz tomei? Ugezeira mishum mashkin is dezav. That's a rabbinic ruling to protect or to ensure that people will be aware that mashkin haboin machmas zav is metame, and that's metame already midoraisa. So as we said in the past, the rabbonin will enact additional stringencies so as to protect laws that are of a Torah basis. So with regard to vessels, mashkin haboin machmazav or metame the vessels midoraisa, mashkin haboin machmas sheretz are metame vessels midorabonan. With regard to oichlin, mashkin haboin machmas sheretz would be metame the oichlin midoraisa, and as a result of that they imposed a gzeiro on mashkin haboin machmas yodayim in anticipation of the case of mashkin haboin machmas sheretz vis-a-vis food. Now at this point in the Gemara we have this, you've noticed this double star, and just note the comment on the side of the Gemara where we note chipus achar shar yudches dovor, the search for the balance of the 18, to complete the number 18 gezeros of the that we follow Beis Shammai over Beis Hillel, Mamshich Bedaf Tezayim Mubeis. Be'emtza Ha'amud B'Sheilas V'idoch HaMesumonos HaMesumonos with this bow tie shape. In other words, if you have Tezayim Mubeis accessible, you'll notice that in the middle of that Omud, there is a bow tie shape with surrounding the word V'idoch. At that point, the Gemara picks up its search for the Gzeira. So, till now, we made note of the case of Lo Yikra Lor Haner and Lo Yifala Kalov, and all of these, this last several we had on Daf Yud Gimel Amud Beis, all of these cases of things that will matama, will pasal truma mi derabbanan. So that would account for approximately eight or nine gezeros, and we will then be searching for the balance of these gezeros on Daf Tes Zayin Amud Beis. We have to get to a total of 18. At this point, the Gemara, will say, gets off onto a detail of that which we have mentioned before. We focus now on the history behind the Tumas Yodayim. We said till now that the Tuma imposed on unwashed hands was a function of the ruling of the Talmidei Shammai that were accepted over the Talmidei Hillel. Is this really so, that they were the ones responsible for this gezerah, gezeras yodayim, or tumas yodayim? On the side of the Gemara, you'll notice we have a nosei mivneh heading, and you'll notice a diamond is featured. The diamond in this sugya represents kushyos, these are questions, and what is the nature of the questions? Hatsaot chilufiot, alternative suggestions, l'talmidei hillel v'shamay kemesakein gezeras yodayim. Alternatives to them, to Talmidei Hillel v'Shammai, as being the ones behind the Tumas Yodayim Gezera. So if we just scan ahead in the Gemara, you'll notice a diamond around Shammai the Hillel. These are the masters themselves, the original Shammai and Hillel, and later a suggestion concerning Shlomo, King Solomon, as the author or the one who imposed the Gezera of Tumas Yodayim. So the Gemara asks, and of course take note of the fact we have a long question marking. What we've done to the immediate right hand side of the Gemara text, you have a kuf, and there's a diamond. This diamond corresponds to the Shammai V'Hillel, and there's a number one indicating this is the first suggestion of alternative authorship of Gzeras Yodayim. And there's a long question marking, as you can see the dashed vertical line indicating that all of these lines develop the question. Later, there's a question number two, in the same spirit of things, trying to suggest even an earlier authorship of the Gezera, that of Shlomo Melech. So the Gemara asks, V'yodayim Talmidei Shammai V'Hillel Gozer, is that really so that they, the students of Shammai Hillel, imposed this Gezera? Shammai V'Hillel Gozer, the original Shammai and Hillel, they imposed the Gezera of Yodayim, the Sanya. We have a Tanaic source. Take note of the fact that at the end of this frame section, it's a five-line section, you see Shammai V'Hillel Gozer Tumo Al Yodayim is dashed, underlined. That's really what we are focusing on. The rest of the source will be part of a discussion later in the Gemara, but for our purposes, we want to emphasize the end of this source. So we have a source, Desanya, Yosi ben Yoezer ish Tredo, the Yosi ben Yochanan ish Yerushalayim. These are two early Tanaic personalities. Gozeru Tuma, they imposed impurity al Eretz Ha'amim v'al Kli Zechuchis. Eretz Ha'amim is a reference to lands outside Israel. Kli Zechuchis, a reference to glass. Meaning that glass, even though it's a substance that's not recorded in the Torah, and hence from the Torah we don't know that glass would makabel tuma, would be susceptible to impurity. Nevertheless, they rule that glass is susceptible to impurity. As far as Eretz Amim, let's just take a look at Rashi in the lower part of the page. Al Eretz Amim, and we shum sofek kvoros shelahen. in the lands outside of Israel, we are suspect that any area might have a Gentile grave. The Nochri Metamid Magva Masa Voyla Ravonam, a dead Gentile imparts tuma through contact, through carrying, and through overshadowing, according to the Rabbanon. The Rabbi Shimon Nami, Rabbi Shimon disagrees with the Rabbanon regarding tumas oihel. He says, according to Rabbi Shimon Nami, domer ein metam oihel. Nevertheless, metamen heim b'mago v'maso v'rekev. There are other sources of tuma, of tumas mace associated with the nochri, contact and carrying, and rekev is decomposition. The Gemara continues. Shimon ben Shetach tikein ksuba leisha. Shimon Shetach established the ksuba, which is, we'll call it the marriage financial guarantees for a woman. There's more to say about a ksuba. There's an entire masichta in the Shas called Maseches Ksubas, but for our purposes, it includes the issues of the financial guarantees that a woman receives upon getting married. So he established ksuba leisha, the gozar tuma al kli matchis. That needs explanation because kli matchises are metallic vessels. So you don't, and that those are recorded in the Torah. What is meant here, that he imposed a rabbinic tuma on metal vessels, is something that will be dealt with in the Gemara. Shammai v'hilo gozru tuma al hayadayim, and we need this point. So we see in this source, in the meantime, that the authorship of tumas yadayim is Shammai v'hilo, and not the Talmidei Shammai v'hilo. By the way, as far as markings are concerned, notice how we're trying to be very precise. At the opening of this section, this question, we dashed underlined the word Talmidei, and that it was highlighted, just the word Talmidei, as opposed to what we've dashed underlined here, Shammai v'Hillel. They, the original masters, they created the Gzeira on Yodayim. As we go on in the Gemara, we have another marking, this trapezoid shape, we finally refer to as the volcano shape, is featured on the side of the Gemara, v'chitema. These are, What are we highlighting here? Hatzaos lipitaron hashela shenidchois. These are suggestions of suggested solutions to our problem about authorship, but these suggestions are rejected. Hence, the question really continues till the end of the vertical dashed line. So v'chitema, you might want to say shamai v'siato hilo v'siato, that when we mentioned before that. Well, when this source mentions Shammai v'Hillel made the Gzeira on Yodayim, it doesn't mean they on their own, but rather they together with their siato, their colleagues, or their in this case their generations, they were with, not their students. It's Shammai with their students, with his students, and Hillel with his students, thereby fusing the two authorships. Well, the Omar, Rav Yehuda Omar Shmuel, this suggestion that Shammai and Hillel referenced in this Tanaic source that we just read two lines above is really Shammai with his students, Hillel with his students, that can't be. Because Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel says, Yud ches dovor gozru, ubi yud ches nechleku. This phrase is a little cumbersome without the Rashi. So Rashi explains, sort of like, you read this line backwards, rather like this. There were 18 cases that they had an argument about. The Talmidim of Hillel and Shammai had 18 cases over which there was controversy, which eventually led to Beis Shammai ruling over Beis Hillel. In other words, there were 18 controversies that eventually led to ruling like Beis Shammai over Beis Hillel. The Ilu Hillel v'Shammai lo nechleku ella b'shloisha mekoymus. Hillel and Shammai themselves had a machlokes only in three cases where we would follow Shammai over Hillel. The Omar Rav Huna b'shloisha mekoymus nechleku v'su lo. that they had their machlokesim were in three cases and not any more. And these three cases, by the way, are featured on Tes Vov Amud Aleph. And you'll notice that if you have Tes Vov Amud Aleph in front of you, you'll notice a star four lines from the top, indicating Yudalim and Beis, which ties you into this comment of Rav Huna, three cases that Shammai and Hillel themselves argued where we end up following Shammai. So only in three cases do we follow Shammai over Hillel, whereas the Talmidim, there are 18 cases, and we have to emphasize, of course, that in the three cases that Hillel and Shammai argued where we follow Shammai, Hands was not one of them. That will be featured, as we say, on Daf Tes Vov Amud Aleph. So the most recent suggestion falls away to say that it was Shammai and his students arguing with Hillel and his students regarding hands. V'chitemo, you might want to say, osu inhu gozur litlos, that Hillel and Shammai, they made exera litlos. Litlos means literally suspension, which would mean that hands that come into contact, unwashed hands that come into contact with truma, you would leave the truma aside, not burn it, just let it aside till it goes bad, till it rots, and then you would get rid of it. The osu tamidayu v'gozru lisrof, and then they, the students, came along, and they represented a second level of exera, that means immediate burning of truma upon coming into contact with unwashed hands. So maybe that's the construction, and with that we can then preserve the authorship of both Hillel and Shammai regarding hands, their gzera being litlos, and the students' gzera regarding hands to burn the truma immediately. That's rejected, though. Vomer ilfa yodayim tchilas gzeros in l'sreifa. Regarding hands and rabbinic rulings concerning hands, the initial rabbinic ruling was for burning. There was no stage at which there was exera litlos. Ella. So, at this point we need an answer to the question of who was the author of the exera of Tumas Yadayim. Ella osu inhu gozer velo kiblu minahu. Hillel and Shammai entered the picture in an attempt to make the ruling on hands, but the ruling wasn't accepted. So they're not counted as the authors of Tumas Yadayim. Ve'asu tamidayhu gozru v'kiblu minayu. Eventually, a little while later, when their students came along and debated the topic, so the topic of Tumas Yadayim was accepted only when the students dealt with the issue. So the students are credited with it, and the source that said Shammai v'Hillel gozru tuma yadayim will have to say, according to the Gemara here, it means they attempted to make the gzera, but they didn't. Their gzera didn't stick. The Gemara asks, Vakati Shlomo gozar, he made the gzera on yadayim. They're talking about many years before. Hillel and Shammai, this, we're talking about a time toward the end of the second Beis HaMikdash, when Shlomo lived at the beginning of the first Beis HaMikdash, talking about a span of close to 1,000 years. The Omar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel B'shal Shetikein Shlomo Eruvin Unetilas Yadayim. We dashed underline Netilas Yadayim because this is the emphasis of our question here. When Shlomo ruled upon the realm of Eruvin. Eruvin is not our topic now, so let's just leave that as a separate issue. And when Shlomo made Netilas Yadayim, the rule of washing hands to remove Tumas Yadayim, Yotza Baskol V'Yomra, a heavenly voice came forth and announced, B'ni im chocham libcho yismach libi gam oni. Chocham b'ni v'samech libi v'ashiv v'chorfei dovar. These are psukim that are descriptions of Bani, a reference to Shlomo HaMelech, as imposing these rulings of Eruvin and Netilas Yadayim, which were a manifestation, we'll say, of his Chochmah, of his great wisdom. So we see from here that Shlomo HaMelech made the Gzera of Netil Sadayim. The Gemara answers. And here at the bottom, also, the bottom of Omid Beis, and we continue now at the top of Tezvav and Aleph. Shlomo, again, also Shlomo, Gozar Lekochim. Shlomo HaMelech imposed Tuma on hands, but only with regard to their contact with sacrificial food. The Asu Inhu, the Gozer Af Lutruma. Hillel and Shammai, and we'll say their students, made the Gzera regarding hands ruining Truma as well. That means unwashed hands as passeling Truma. This concludes today's Gemara section of Gemara Markings Daf Yomi. For those who are interested, our site offers a shiur on today's Daf Yomi Tosfos, presenting the Tosfos text with explanation.